Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly. As soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in the office, we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say you better
good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Banana Radio Show. Let's just see. Oh, I know. We don't have Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. Today in the role of Chris Harrington, John Martin.
John, I come to you for a lot of things. Profound ain't one of them.
He did such a spot-on, dead-ringer imitation last week of Chris Harrington. They were bringing John back at 10 o'clock from his normal 9:30 slot. On Wednesdays, we're shifting him to 10 o'clock in the Chris Harrington spot. And then, no one does Sam Hardiman better than Sam Hardiman, and so we will have Sam Hardiman on. Talk about what's happening in the city, including the continuing saga of XAI. By the way, do you use ChatGPT? Do you use any kind of, the AI stuff in your own life routinely? Have you incorporated AI into your life routinely?
No. The only thing I would say, technically, it's AI when you have predictive text.
I find predictive text to be kind of irritating, even. I don't, in terms of going often wrong, honestly.
There's no question on that. But like in terms of going to like a prompt and saying,
yeah,
like,
saying what is
no, I've never done
give
it.
Me a recipe for chicken parm. You know? No.
Right.
Whatever. Help me write a thank you note to my grandmother.
Right.
And include the following.
Yep.
I have not done it. What percentage of America of our listeners are doing it right now? Are you intentionally going to and relying on AI?
I'm going to say probably under 20%, right? Because like I'm thinking about my college friend group, and a lot of them even work in tech, and only a couple or a handful have ever used it.
Unbeknownst to us, there's stuff like predictive text. It has been incorporated for us in ways that we may not even appreciate, but I certainly don't.
In terms of using like a marketed product, no.
Anyway, we'll talk to Sam in the second hour as well. So Chris Hardiman, John Martin, and then Sam Hardiman. Chris Hardiman, that would be splicing Sam and Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine what that would yield, what that experiment?
A lot of analysis.
Would be a lot of thoughtfulness in that human being. Okay, it is Wednesday. Today is the Pro-Am out at the golf tournament. They've teed off, Jeffrey. And I don't know if you're following along, but I do know they've teed up.
Is this the real Pro-Am, or is this the spring break?
No, that is. This is the real one, and the pros play 9 holes.
Okay, so I didn't realize now that we're back as a – now that it's not a WGC, it's back. Okay.
And they do a – the pros play, but they only have to play – pros play 9 holes, and then they shift off and you get a second pro, which is good for everybody, by the way.
Yeah, it's a win-win.
Right? It's good for the pros.
Happy.
They do less, and you get two pros for the price of one.
Yeah, I'm also not really in the business of – making the pros' lives a whole lot easier. Like they get their way a lot.
That's fine. So that is happening. We got tee times for the golf tournament tomorrow.
Feels like the afternoon's stacked.
Well, I mean, you got Scheffler at 12:45 tomorrow, and Shoffley, that is 12:45 tomorrow, 9:45 Friday. I guess that's your headliners. Rory and Colin Morikawa at 9:45 tomorrow, 12:45.
Yep.
Justin Rose will get things, and Ben Griffin will get things started at 7:20 tomorrow. There's going to be a little, there's a little misting out there right now. And I got an email.
Scoring conditions, Jeff.
Scoring conditions. I got an email about the weather. The media's in a tent out there, basically.
Yeah.
And so if weather breaks out, everyone abandons the tent.
It's like right behind one, right?
Yeah, and so you're not allowed to lie. I mean, you can stay and you can, at your own risk. But the staff leaves.
Yeah.
Like, everybody leaves. So they are expecting some weather out there. Anyway,
At that point, you've signed your own waiver.
Signed your own waiver. We do have a lot to get to today in the first hour before we get to John Martin and before we get to Sam Hardiman. Here's one thing I was thinking about, Jeffrey.
All right.
So there are, it seems to me that the sports entities here that we care and historically have cared most deeply about, well, there's the golf tournament, which has been here for forever, right? It's really the longest running, and Tiger basketball, as they sort of began in earnest in the 60s.
Yeah.
So maybe the same age. So there's the golf tournament, and then there's University of Memphis sports. And I'm not equating them to. I mean, University of Memphis sports is more important than the golf tournament,
yeah.
But because it's an ongoing all year round deal and it's connected to. But still, golf tournament, University of Memphis sports, and the Grizzlies. Grizzlies, obviously, the new kid on the block there, right? But in many ways, certain terms of profile, now the most important. Here's my question. In terms of challenges and opportunities for those three entities going forward in the next 15 years, how do you feel about them? And which one do you feel most bullish about? I'm not even just talking about how many W's they're going to stack.
Yeah, no, you're talking about the health of the events.
I mean, in particular,
programs.
Making your way through the new changing world of all of this. Let's just start with golf. We'll start with golf and then we'll make our way through it. So golf, which has had this, has been an entrenched, the original major league sport in Memphis. Well, there you've got, and it in many ways has never been better. Like, you've got the best golfers in the world coming here, which if Phil Mickelson would deign to come,
How pumped we were to move it to the week before the U.S. Open? Because, I mean, we could get the big Europeans.
Yeah, get a big, yeah. Like, it was used to
we
be
got
just
Rory, like, in 20, like 2009.
For yeah. scraps. And now you walk out there, any group you look at is going to be, literally one of the best golfers in the world. So that's even with the LIV folks having broken off. It is a incredible field out there compared to the scraps, the breadcrumbs that we used to have. And so that has been incredibly upgraded. And in many ways, again, it's crushing it compared to what it once was. It does feel like, though, with the LIV split, with golf not being where it is once Tiger left, right, basically just generally. And then I do worry about attendance, corporate sponsorship, all of that in Memphis. It's very clear Memphis's place on the tour schedule is where it is because of FedEx. And as long as FedEx is interested in maintaining that relationship, I imagine that will be secure. But I don't rule out the possibility that the next 10 years that could change.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, as long as FedEx is going to be a big part of the PGA Tour, Memphis is going to be a significant part of the PGA Tour. The question, though, is what does the world of professional golf look like in 10 years? And I don't have a great answer
for
you.
That's really the question.
Because I think it's going to be some combination of private equity money, Saudi money, and...
Well, I mean, look at tennis, all left. Tennis 100%. Just went to Europe. Like, we used to have we had Agassi here, we had
yeah.
Sampras here, we had Courier here, we had, like,
underrated
all of
Memphis sports moment when when Sampras took the check and then lost in the first round.
That occasionally would happen.
Mm-hmm. But Andy Roddick showed up every year, almost.
Andy Roddick... Now, Andy Roddick was... when Andy Roddick was here every year, he was sort of the equivalent of, in the lean years of the golf tournament, when Mickelson would come.
Yeah.
He would be the one tent pole around the whole tournament was built.
I'm a Roddick guy forever.
It was just Roddick.
Yep.
And he showed up for forever. But then all of a sudden, what happened was, it wasn't that that tour stop was unsuccessful. It's that
the ATP wanted to go to
tennis. Said screw it, we're out of here. You know,
I mean, what we have basically, we have three big tournaments.
Cincinnati's going on right now.
There's
a Texas, I think. There's
Miami. There's Indian Wells.
Yeah,
and the Cincinnati. What do we call it?
Is that it?
I think that's it.
They all just left.
And I think Cincinnati's on death's doorstep. And it has nothing to do, to your point,
it has nothing to do
with the health of the tournament. That thing's well attended, everything.
And largely what I'm talking about in all of these examples is how these local institutions are going to fare given the shifting world around them, right? That's what we're sort of talking about here. So I think, I don't know, 10 years from now, will the tournament be here and flourishing?
My guess is there will be a tournament, but it's not going to be a premier stop.
If FedEx is involved, why they wouldn't insist on anything other than a premier stop?
Well, it's one thing when FedEx pays, you know, whatever, $70 million a year. I forget what the exact number is, but private equity is going to have $2 billion. The Saudis are going to have $2 billion. I mean,
right.
What's
I see. 4 if point... you're competing with that kind
Correct.
Of people who just mindlessly throwing money...
If FedEx
has to be corporately responsible.
Correct. And if you look at the most likely model that they're going to follow is something that resembles, honestly, the ATP Tour or Formula One, which is they want to go to big, glamorous markets.
Well, it is interesting because, again, I would urge you, if you've never, it's a great event out there. And it's beautiful. Food's good. Head on to Birdies and Bubbles at 14.
Don't forget your Pronto Pup before you go.
And don't forget, Jeffrey likes pairing it with the Pronto Pup. And
Elena recommends the Paloma.
And they are doing a aggressive job this year of reaching out to non-traditional golf fan bases and folks. And so I would urge you to go. It's a blast. I like Sunday. Sunday just feels like a happening to me. I really like Sunday. Sunday, it feels like I see all these people I know. I just feels like a happening.
I've always been a Saturday guy. This year, though, Aaliyah said she got offered better tickets for Sunday, so we're going on Sunday. Because I like to watch on TV on Sunday.
Yeah, there is that. Well, and typically, as covering the golf tournament, the first 3 days you just wander around.
Yeah.
Sunday, you're
largely watching on TV.
Okay. All right, let's go to the next institution. The next institution's the University of. Oh, by the way, on the golf tournament, here's a little mark. For example, Blue Cross Blue Shield does a great job. They sponsor the volunteers, and if you've been here for any length of time, you understand the importance of the volunteers at that golf tournament. It's incredible. People take weeks off; they take vacation to volunteer at the golf tournament, and they do it because they love Memphis, because they love St. Jude, because they feel like this is something I can do, and so I'm going to spend my week out here sweltering at the golf tournament. Plus, they enjoy it. Honestly, they have a lovely time, but. They could not have the tournament without the volunteers. It's very clear. One of the interesting phenomena, though, is volunteers getting older.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was once upon a time when the golf tournament, you know, in the 1970s, it was the only major league sport in Memphis. And all these people started volunteering and kept volunteering, right? And now, I was talking to someone who works in the volunteer group that works in the clubhouse with the players. And I forgot what the exact number was, but she said, I have 9 people who do this work with me and 5 of them are widows. Like it's just, and
so my grandmother ran scoring. For
they need young volunteers. Honestly, yeah. They need it, but it's not any different than the University of Memphis needs young boosters. You know, it's the
very much
these
the same
institutions
thing.
That have been supported so fervently over the years by a certain generation, and the next generation has to buy in. So moving to the University of Memphis, how do you feel about their prospects? Same thing. In many ways, just like golf. in many ways.
It's also tied to FedEx.
Hard to feel like it feels like they're killing it now. They're an R1 research institution. They are finally maybe the best program outside the Power 4/5, whatever you want to call it. And they're poised for what appears to be a big year in football. And as long as Penny's there in basketball, they got a shot. And if you look across the breadth of the programs, whether it's men's soccer or particularly women's soccer, or they just hired a new softball coach. Hopefully they get that figured out. There is broad success academically. They do extraordinarily well. Like, I'm very impressed with what's happening at the University of Memphis. But the sands around them are shifting. And, I was looking at the numbers. They had there's a piece over at ESPN today about the NIL transfer numbers
yep.
for the year, right? And
was it 192 quarterbacks? What was it?
So 2,800 football players went into the portal. That is 2,707 transfers there were this year. That is 25% of all the players, okay? And a whole lot of them went from Group of Five to Power Four, right? A whole lot of them did. There were 88 all-conference players in, quote-unquote, lesser conferences who are now playing in the Power Four. 88 of them. There were 272 players who went from the Group of Five to the Power Four. There were 192 QBs. 192!
For perspective, there are 136 schools.
It's just unbelievable.
That's nearly a third additional set of schools.
How about this? Repeat transfers. Repeat transfers? This is people who had already transferred once.
Repeat offenders.
And now they're transferring again. And whatever you say about NIL being good for the athletes, which in some ways it is, very clearly, puts money in their pocket. It's empowering. It puts money in their pocket. And for lots of quarterbacks, we've seen this. It is vaulted them. Hell, vaulted Bo Nix into the first round, right? Like, it is.
Absolutely.
Michael Penix vaulted him into the first round. We've seen lots of quarterbacks flourish because of this. It has been, in many ways, good for
Jaden Daniels.
The athletes. Jaden Daniels, there you go. You can't argue that.
Caleb!
Right. You can't argue.
Now, he followed his coach, but.
You can't argue that going, repeating, transferring, and then transferring again is good for, certainly for your education, right? Or most of these guys aren't going to make it to the NFL. They're not. And so, in the end, the education does actually matter. They're not going to mostly make it to the NFL. It doesn't, and it for the experience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, but the problem is they're not transferring for that reason. They're transferring as a business.
They are transferring as a business, right? But it what part of the fallout will be educational. Anyway, you have this universe that Memphis is faced with, and once upon a time, it wasn't hard for Memphis to play Ole Miss, right?
No.
Now it's. Power Four schools just don't want to play you, and the money is getting, the money divide is.
And wait till you get a 9-game SEC schedule. We really won't want to play you.
So, and the night game and the financial divide is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. How confident do you feel about the future of University of Memphis sports? Again, the opportunity, but right now, maybe they'll make it over. Like, it's interesting. And Tim Buckley did a column yesterday. I guess it dropped maybe the day before, about it was weighing, would you rather be in the ACC or the Big 12? And it was a very interesting column. Of course, the answer is,
either.
I'd rather be whichever one it lets me in. In the end, you're not going to get invitations from both. You're not going to be picking and choosing. And if, by the way, you get an opportunity in the ACC, it's only because the ACC blew up. So comparing the ACC versus the Big 12 as they look right now isn't really relevant to the world that will have, if you get an invitation. But the point is that maybe Memphis could find itself there. But how concerned do you feel? I would be, like, I am deeply concerned, and I'm sure they are at the University of Memphis. I am deeply concerned about their ability to be the nationally competitive program that they've been, certainly in hoops.
So the question that I would like answered is, does the ACC have minimal? I think it seems obvious at this point, people are leaving the ACC, but how many? Because the fear that I have is you should kind of be rooting for like three schools to leave so that they have to replenish that way.
Right.
The fear that I have, though, is that you have this mass exodus, and then ESPN.
So, Clemson leaves.
Clemson leaves. North Carolina leaves. Virginia leaves. Florida State obviously
leaves.
Florida
State leaves.
Miami leaves. Maybe NC State, Virginia Tech.
If it were three, it would stop at Florida State, Clemson, and North Carolina. Is that what you're saying?
Probably. You could talk me into four. And
where does everyone else go?
So this would be the concern that I have is, rather than the ACC going, all right, well, let's go replenish and refill, ESPN's like, the value of this conference is nothing.
Nothing.
So then the Big 12 probably scoops up what they want, and
they take the elite of the elite there.
Correct. They take the biggest brands, and then that's another way that I see you on the outside looking in. So, like,
does the AAC get better because they then pick up some that aren't picked up? Marginally?
To make the argument, it can't get worse right now. Marginally. There's always going to be a couple of teams that don't have a home.
What's interesting to me, I guess this exercise is, what's interesting is, and I was tempted not to talk about it because I like to walk on the sunny side of the street.
Mm-hmm, of course.
I like to walk on the sunny side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is the contrast between, there is both opportunity and peril for everybody here. In many ways, the golf tournament is crushing it. Like, you walk out, go watch Rory McIlroy today.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by the way, who's a bigger star? Rory or Scotty?
Rory still.
He is a bigger star.
Yeah.
There's no question. Like, Scotty's a better golfer right mm-hmm. now, but Rory's a bigger star.
Yeah.
So when I say you can go watch a star, that's Rory. You can go watch Rory, right? In Memphis, Tennessee, go watch Rory.
Jordan Spieth.
You can eat a Prado pup. And watch Rory McIlroy. My God, this is fantastic.
Jordan's still probably a bigger star than Scotty.
Probably, yeah. So it's unbelievable, and yet there is very clearly things to be negotiated.
Oh yeah,
there are waters to be navigated, and the same thing is with the University of Memphis. Right now, we're looking forward to this incredible football season, what we hope is going to be an incredible football season. There is real anticipation of it, and maybe it doesn't, maybe it's not at the fever pitch that one would hope it would. Like, it's not quite, like, the most anticipated ever. Like, I don't know how, we'll see if how well that translates, but it's clearly, just go back a year. The way people feel about it now compared to a year ago, dramatically different. Dramatically different.
No question.
There's real optimism, and you got to give them credit, incredible credit for what they've done over there. And yet, big picture, all stuff is worried. I think there's nowhere, but I think in none of these examples is it more clear of both the opportunity and the peril than the Grizzlies. Because the opportunity, I really do believe this, the opportunity in the next 10 years includes an NBA championship in Memphis. That is within the realm of possibility. It's not fantasy. It's within the realm of possibility that the Grizzlies win a title in the next 10 years. And it is absolutely that they have literally. And when that happens, it's not like the NCAA tournament where you're off at some distant site. It's everyone coming here.
Right.
It's the spotlight.
Home games.
It's home games. It's NBA Finals home games. And you could be looking at a period, at with the core that they have and with the young talent that they have, if it develops, if Gigi becomes what we hope he will, if Vince is what he looked like he could be, if Zach Edey, maybe he's a monster. There's a chance that he's a monster. If he is all of, like, you could be looking at a sustained period of really elite basketball for the next 5 years, certainly, right?
Absolutely.
Easily the best five-year period in Grizzlies history. Easily you could be looking at. You also have a situation where they have to, and we may mention this, like, they have yet to sign their lease. You know, it ends in 29. And It's funny because back when Jerry Green did the tour of Beale Street, remember that when we talked about all this? And it's very clear that what matters most now is it's not just like the terms of the lease, right? It's about what is going to be done with the neighborhood so people feel safe downtown. And really, I'll say this. The future of the Grizzlies is tied to the future of Memphis, right? You know what I mean?
Like, I think that's more than fair.
What matters is that people once again, and this is true whether you're talking about the Majestic or the Orpheum or any place downtown. What matters is that
minus the Rendezvous. They seem to be impervious.
Is that people feel safe and that they want to get in their cars and go downtown, and that we have a vibrant downtown again. And that people are working down there and eating down there and all of that. And I'm convinced that if that happens, the Grizzly stuff will take care of itself, right? But if it doesn't, then I think more is up for grabs. I'll say that. I think, like Richard Smith has said this, talked about what a pivotal moment this is for Memphis. And I think it's a pivotal moment for Memphis. And so you have all of these institutions that have been part of what makes Memphis Memphis, what makes Memphis great. And yet in many ways, their future is linked to the city's future, right? I mean, we got to figure out a way. It's funny because 901 Day is coming up again, right? You know, and I've thought about how people's thoughts about Memphis have changed so dramatically up and down since I've been here. When I came here, very low ebb, very low ebb. And then if you look at the peak of the grit grind era where everything was 901, right? Choose 901, 901 FC, couldn't have enough 901s, 901 everywhere, right?
Yep.
And now it's like, everyone's leaving, you know? And reality is rough, and I'd say perception is worse than reality. And so you've got these three institutions that have been, and I really do think, like, it's all those people at all those places, at the golf tournament, at the University of Memphis, and at the Grizzlies, are busting their asses to put on great events and to do great things. And we need them to do great things. But it just struck me that this could be a tremendous 10-year period in Memphis sports. You could see the University of Memphis finally get into a more competitive, I don't know what that's going to look like, more competitive conference. You could have NBA finals here. You could have a continuation of the best golf we've ever seen. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing the best golf we've ever seen right now in Memphis. You could have a continuation of that. Or you could have, you could have a situation like the tennis tournament, right?
Yeah, I think to bottom line it, I think you have to say, I feel the best about the University of Memphis because in the end, even if they're not at the promised land, they're still going to play games. They're still going to, you know what I mean? Like, even if they're diminished or whatnot, like, I don't know for sure that there's going to be a golf tournament here in 10 years.
I think I feel best about the Grizzlies only because the ceiling is so high for the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
And I think the Grizzlies could be part of the catalyst for, I mean, the fact that the Grizzlies are willing to, it's not just that they're concerned with the neighborhood around them. They're willing to be a catalyst to improve the neighborhood around them, right? And the fact that they are willing to do that and says, listen, someone's got to, you know, I think is promising. And I'll say this. Would you predict an NBA Finals in the next 5 years?
Probably not, just because you're better off betting no. You know what I mean? Only one team.
You're certainly better off paying. Oh, NBA Finals. In Western Conference Finals, I meant. Would you just an appearance? Would you predict a return to the Western Conference Finals in the next 5 years?
I'll say yes. I think I'd get some odds, though.
You would get some odds.
I'd hold that ticket, yeah.
I think so. I think so. I think you could, yeah.
I mean, what we're seeing right now is the league, particularly the West, it's been thinned out pretty good. I mean, to me, like, the real question is...
It's funny, though. Like, we say thinned out pretty good. What are you going to do with a Phoenix team? We just saw Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, you know...
You're telling me Kevin Durant's going to play a whole season?
He didn't have to play a whole season.
Well, that's what happens last year, is... You don't play a whole season.
They weren't good once at the end of the season. Like they weren't. They did not have it figured out at their zenith. They weren't good. Like they were not what they didn't have a point guard. They never figured it out. It wasn't just that he was not healthy. It was that it didn't work. As that group did not work last year. I think that group could very well work this year. Maybe not.
I mean, they could, but also Denver can be worse. I mean.
My God. The problem with Denver is they not only lost a very valuable player to Orlando, but Jamal Murray's looked awful.
Yeah.
He's looked awful in the Olympics. He looked awful in the games leading up to the Olympics, and he wasn't good in the playoffs. Like
he hit big shots that really masked pretty poor play.
All right, we're going to take a break. We got John Martin straight up at 10 o'clock. We got Sam Hardiman after that. We're going to play Believe It or Not coming up next. I will tell you, if you are selling your house, Josh Hysaw is the person to call. He is so confident he can sell your home. He is guaranteeing. That's right. He is guaranteeing he will sell your house. Indeed, you'll get a cash offer on your home if you hire Josh Hysaw and his team at Keller Williams Realty. You don't have to take my word for it. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. That's right. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. So if you're selling your house, tricky market right now. Again, it's Josh Hysaw from Keller Williams. The phone number is 901-461-8147 or joshhasthebuyers.com. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins, Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Before you head out to the golf tournament, head over to Oak Hall. I saw Jim Nantz at Oak Hall one day. That's like, if Jim Nantz is in Memphis, where would he go? He'd go to Oak Hall, of course. And
the Vineyard Vine store.
And the Vineyard Vine store. And you want to, if you're heading out there, you want to look your best, comfortable, cool, comfortable, but snappy. And Jim Nantz recognizes it. So whether you're getting ready for fall football season and tailgates, or whether you're ready and getting ready to head out to the FedEx St. Jude Championship, head over to Oak Hall. I've said this a million times. I went to my high school reunion this weekend. What did I wear? I wore Oak Hall, of course. I wore Oak Hall. A Faraday shirt. I wore a Faraday shirt and some slacks from Oak Hall. And when you want to look your best, they've got incredible clothes. Just unbelievably helpful people. Go where Jim Nantz goes when he's in town. Go to Oak Hall. Hey, Jeffrey, let's play a quick game of Believe It or Not.
Now it's time for Believe It.
I don't even know if I believe.
Now I'm a believer.
Or not. Believe it or not. On the Jeff Calkins Show.
All right, Jeffrey, so you would happily wear Will Levis's new cologne.
Believe it or not.
I absolutely do not believe that. I hate mayonnaise with a passion of a thousand suns. Absolutely not. Get that out of here.
So the cologne is, it's called Number 8, Will Levis Number 8 Mayonnaise Cologne. It's with a collaboration with Hellman's. The bottle sold out very quickly. It's got, here's what it has, Jeffrey, in it. Tart lemon, mayonnaise accord, parsley, coffee undertones, musk, and creamy vanilla.
Musk?
And creamy vanilla.
So we've got...
I bet it smells good. I bet it doesn't...
It's a mix of mayo and ranch.
Does mayo have a... Does mayo have a scent? I don't think it has a scent. I don't think mayo has a scent.
Certainly got a disgusting taste.
I love mayo. I just slather it on there. In fact, I ate... You know what I ate this morning?
Probably a BLT with mayo.
No, not even. I just took a piece of bread, I slathered mayo on it heavily, and some cheese, and I ate it.
And we talk about me having fat kid tendencies.
I love mayo. Mayo is... I don't understand how anyone can eat a sandwich without mayo. Mayo makes it moist and delicious. Mustard's overpowering, and it doesn't have that...
It's additive.
It's not thick and creamy.
It's
just flavor. Do you wear cologne, period?
Not really.
Let's be honest. I don't know if this is going to shock anyone. I never wear cologne.
I mean, I wear aftershave.
I don't wear cologne. Aftershave either. I wear deodorant. Does that count?
No.
That's it.
Yeah.
I don't spritz myself with anything. I sat next to an airplane next to a guy the other day, and he was overpowering. It was a young man.
I had one cologne.
And he was absolutely overpowering. I'm like, I don't want to stink. I don't want to smell bad.
There was one cologne I had that I really liked, but it's discontinued. I can't find it again. So,
what percentage of men wear cologne? Or aftershave? What percentage of men
right now pretty high.
Have a scent?
I mean, that's the problem. Are we counting, like...
What do you do? What do you,
deodorant, antiperspirant's going to have a pretty strong
strength. It has its own scent, too. So what do? Do you slap on the aftershave?
I rub it in, because, like, you can get razor burn.
Oh, you do it for a...
I do it for razor burn, not for the scent.
You do it for... Okay, let's see. Well, what percent of men wear cologne? I suspect most of this Will Levis stuff...
I mean, it's a marketing gimmick for...
Yeah, it's just a... It's like...
It's a helmet. It's an activation, Jeff. That's what they call it in the biz.
It's the Penny Hardy barbecue. It's Penny Hardaway barbecue sauce. People didn't really eat that. They got it because it was... They have the bottle. Yeah. I have a bottle. According to a 2013 study, that's recent enough. What the hell? Recent enough for Sports Talk Radio. 63% of men between the ages of 18 and 64 wear fragrance at least occasionally. What percent do you think wear it all the time?
Probably 25.
Jeffrey, you're like a genius.
Mm-hmm.
23%.
Well, you spotted me the hard one.
23% wear it all the time. A quarter of men wear it all the time. 63% wear it at least occasionally. So there you go. All right. Second episode of Hard Knocks. Another banger, Jeffrey.
Believe it or not.
Well, that sounds like a no to me.
I'm going to say I don't believe it.
No. What? Tell me the hard ones. First of all, by the way, on HBO Max or whatever.
Yeah. It's just Max now. We've dropped the HBO.
It was an hour late.
I mean, we were. It was Aaliyah's birthday, so I.
So you weren't.
I didn't watch. I didn't start right at eight anyway.
So what was the best part? It was a lot of Simone Biles, right?
It was Simone early, but it wasn't a ton.
Her boyfriend. Her husband. Is a bear.
Let's see.
What else did
I mean,
get?
How much
of that humiliating Bills defeat did you get?
That was probably like the last 15 minutes. Now, they did a pretty good job of not spinning it. At half, it was 6-3. Like, if you just saw the bottom line, you're like, oh my God, the Bills, what happened?
By the way, I thought Caleb Williams looked good. And he looked good in a...
I agree.
Well, what we know he does well is he throws on the move well, he gets out of the pocket. He looked good. Like, again, I take the preseason pledge, but when all we have to go on with Caleb Williams is what we've seen so far, and as a, you know, rookie making his first start, by the way, against the Bills' first team defense,
yeah,
looked good.
They actually showed it out of order. They made it look like he struggled. So, like, he started.
And they wanted to show improvement or something.
Right. Yeah. They showed it out of order because he started 4-for-4.
Right.
And then the drive where they made it look like the drive where he missed the three passes,
right,
or whatnot. They made it look like that was the start, and then no, he finished. It's like, no, he started 4-for-4. Josh had a great line to him at the end. So when Caleb was running out of bounds and flipped it late,
yeah,
Josh goes, "You got to draw that flag." He slapped him on the back, and he's like, that's a free 15. The problem you can tell now is we're getting into the
kind of heavily edited section.
We're getting into the issues we're always going to have with Hard Knocks, which is, unless you have a situation like last year where it was the world according to Aaron Rodgers, which is just going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Whether or not we agree with it, like, it's interesting. You're now starting to get, you can see the scenes where they don't have anything, so they're trying to, like, add some personality. Like, it was what was your first memory? That was the quarterback room. You can just tell it's getting thinner and thinner and thinner. I do predict, though, Bears are going to have a lot of hot buzz after this.
J.J. McCarthy, that's a big setback. J.J. McCarthy has knee surgery.
Believe it or not.
I'm going to say, actually, I don't believe it because...
He wasn't supposed to play anyway.
Well, and then further, this doesn't rush it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So rather than... because they did do the move on Saturday. I double checked just to make sure. He got to play with the starters against the number two defense.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he looked amazing, and I'm having
one of the interesting. One of the interesting things is, so the Bills have their second round draft pick, right?
Yep.
The Bills have their second round draft pick, and so when this news broke yesterday on the Bills message board, it was, this is great. We're going to have the number one pick in the second round. I don't think that's true at all. Who is more apt to get you a win this year?
Probably Sam Darnold.
It's Sam Darnold, exactly right. I think they will win more games with Sam Darnold than they would with JJ.
I think the real question is, you and I have talked about this, now with everyone giving up on quarterbacks very, very quickly, making it, I don't even know if it's giving up. They make decisions very quickly at a much quicker rate than previously. I am curious to know if, like, we're going to start to have this second quarterback market. Baker's found a new home. Goss found a new home. Could Darnold be a guy that finds, you know, a new home, even though he feels like a bridge guy?
Do you play fantasy football anymore? Probably not.
Begrudgingly.
Okay.
I mainly do it to keep up my friend.
Are you mocking down Justin Jefferson because of the quarterback situation? In other words, is he going to be overvalued?
No, but I mean, I with a full disclosure, take fantasy advice from me with a grain of salt.
Uh-huh.
No, because I actually just, like, I think they're going to just force him the ball.
So you're still bullish?
Yeah.
Still bullish on him. Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal for J.J. McCarthy. Whatever. He'll be.
Do we know yet? Are they going to do the repair? Are they going to do the shave? I didn't see one way or the other.
Don't know. Took the repair, it took a while.
Correct.
For
Jaren.
For Jaren. Absolutely. You know what a Strava jockey is.
Now it's time for not.
Believe it.
I do not believe that.
So there's two shameful development. What I consider to be shameful development in the world. What is the world coming to moments here, right, for me, when I read both of these stories, okay? And departing for this for a minute, which is more shameful? A Strava jockey is, Strava is this program you have on your phone that where you can record how far you've run and how fast you've run or how far you cycled. People do their exercises on
Strava.
So it's
a fitness app.
It's a fitness app.
Okay.
And it's public,
yeah.
And so you get kudos if you've whatever.
Nice pat on the back.
What I know, you kudos. Your friends say kudos. Whatever
sure.
else you record, it's a way for you to look at your 40-mile bike ride and realize that the second segment I did faster than whatever and whatever. Okay,
you get your splits and stuff. Yeah,
a Strava jockey is you pay someone to carry your phone and put up fake Strava accounts, fake numbers for you. Is Strava jockey? So it started actually in Indonesia, and it has spread wildly since then. You're like,
wait, this is a real toss-up of which one's more pathetic?
I haven't given you the other one.
I thought you were saying the
Strava jockey,
the app versus...
The Strava jockey,
okay.
No.
Okay.
The Strava jockey is one thing that I find,
right.
That
made a strong case.
That's pretty
pathetic.
I don't even understand it except as a...
I mean, it's the peak of narcissism.
It's also not real. Like, it's not, no one is, there's not large numbers of people who are
Jeff, I hope you know this. Instagram's not real either.
Right. But there's not, I don't believe it to be a real phenomenon.
Okay, you're saying the phenomenon. Okay.
The phenomenon is not, really a spreading phenomenon. Because people who do Strava, they like to exercise. They're exercising.
I think only
at the very fringe are people egotistical enough to actually hire Strava jockeys. Okay,
I bet the numbers are higher than you think.
Okay, so then the one that I'm going to compare it to, which is more pathetic,
all right,
is jaw strengthening gum.
Mm.
The New York Times did a story about young men, in particularly, who chew gum in flavors like muscle mango. Or jacked watermelon, for example, so you're going to get a jawline. If you chew particularly extra hard chewing gum, you get a jawline, like Clark Kent or something like that. So Jawliner is a brand. Say goodbye to a weak chin and hello to a jawline that commands attention, says Jawliner. Sells facial fitness chewing gum on its website. This, it very clearly... is a real thing.
Yeah. number one
have you heard of this before?
Yeah, I've heard of the gum, but I have not heard
You'd
of
heard of the jaw heard strengthening of the, gum.
Yeah. Because that was kind of going around the internet last week. Number one's way more pathetic. Like, two sounds like pseudoscience and whatnot, but like...
No one believes it's true. And
right.
It's,
what's right. It, who's it harming? Like, the other one is just like...
Well, one is based on a lie, correct. And one is not. One may not work.
Well, I mean, one could be based on a lie in the sense that, like, it doesn't work.
Yes, but one is you are lying
right.
to people.
Correct. Yes.
The second one, you may be lying to yourself.
Correct.
Like, whether you think it works or not. But it's, in fact... So it's they're both based on vanity.
Yes.
They're both based on vanity, but one is based on dishonesty and vanity, whereas the second one is, you can argue it's self-improvement.
Yeah, the first one is an active participation in a lie. The second one is okay, again, falls into the category of, like, who cares? You know, it's neither here nor there. Like, who's it hurting?
It's kind of so stupid, though.
But I mean, everything's kind of vanity. I mean, Ozempic's worse than all of it.
Ozempic works.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like...
But it actually works.
Right.
But I actually understand why people really do want to be trimmer. And not only that, it was originally a diabetes drug. Your medical numbers get better with Ozempic. That's...
Right, but we were also preventing people from getting... We were preventing people that needed it from getting it because we just wanted to lose an extra 10 pounds.
That part of it's pathetic. Okay. A few more I want to get through. We got John Martin straight up at 10 o'clock. Maybe John uses jaw strengthening gum. I don't know. We'll ask John. He's getting into it.
He's getting into camera shape.
He's getting into camera shape again. So maybe we'll ask him about that. And then we got Sam Hardiman, naturally strong jaw. Sam Hardiman in the second hour as well. Jim Harbaugh is no longer going to be the honorary captain. You know this, for Michigan's first game against Fresno State. It was Jim Harbaugh who made that decision.
Believe it or not.
So, seriously, I have no idea. Because I've tried to go back and forth in my head. Number one, if it's Michigan that makes the decision, why even announce it in the first place? It's not like anyone was calling for it. Were you...
But if they had announced it, you have to make a decision that's off. You can't just have them not show up.
Right,
you have to announce that it's off.
But my point is, you announced, what was it, last Thursday, I think, that you're doing this? That's a very short turnaround to be like, never mind. And there was no one calling for make Jim Harbaugh the captain on opening day.
So where what's your theory then? I don't understand what.
So the
theory.
Point is, I don't know why Michigan would have called it off, but I also don't know why Harbaugh would have called it off.
Well, you call it off because you decide it's a bad look.
Yeah,
who needs the extra attention?
But
he has another gig now. Who?
Right, but my point is, why would all of a sudden he start to have some type of self awareness about bad look?
Why did you? The question is, why did they do it last week?
Announce
it in the first place.
The only kind of reasonable thing that makes a little bit of sense in my head is,
how about someone higher up?
The only thing that makes sense to me is that. People that they were trying to appease money people that want to honor Harbaugh, and they needed to announce that people would roll their eyes, and then
the backlash.
Correct.
So you would say that it could be like Dr. David Rudd said, this is what happened with the Calipari dinner. You had to announce the dinner.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
The blowback to have the strength to say, no, we can't do the Cal dinner.
That's the only thing that makes sense to me. And that's still kind of weird. Like,
okay, last one. Machine Gun Kelly. I have to set the backdrop here. Shout out to the Guardians, by the way. Best team in baseball. We all saw that coming.
Yeah, of course.
Machine Gun Kelly threw out the first pitch last night.
Did he?
Sort of. He, instead of throwing out the first pitch, he signed the ball. And then threw it into the stands.
Souvenir.
As a souvenir. This was a bold and honorable new genius innovation by Machine Gun Kelly.
Believe it or not.
I hate myself. I think I do believe it.
You believe
it? It's actually original. Because not only did he toss it as a souvenir, He also did a baseball move where he stepped off and he picked off to third base before chunking it into the stands. I mean, how many times do we see... Normally, when you see somebody's first pitch, it means it didn't go well. This is the first time we saw viral video of a first pitch.
Yeah, but here's the problem. He got out of the... In the end, there is a certain integrity to having to throw the first pitch. We want to see you summit that mountain of being able to throw the first pitch. Here he got out of having to throw the first pitch.
I kind of respect it because I saw his arm angle. That's not a guy that was probably throwing a strike.
Well, okay. All right, let me ask you this.
This is pretty smart.
Is it something that you would only honor once?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
no. No one else can ever do this again.
No. I know it's a copycat league, obviously, with first pitches. But, yeah, no, you've got to – if you're going to come up with – the problem is now he did this. It's going to get attention. Now we're going to get a string of
variations.
Unclever, like, it's just going to be – that's going to annoy me. But at the same time
– wouldn't it have been better if he had signed it? How about if he throws the first damn pitch right down the pipe, then asks for it back, signs the ball, and throws it into the stands? Wouldn't that be more impressive?
Right, but I don't think he was going to.
Okay, fine. Throw whatever you're going to throw, and then get it and throw it in the stands. This is a total cop-out.
Yeah, but he can't throw.
So it was a genius move.
Yes.
I think it was a genius move for him.
Correct. Again,
is it something that we should applaud? It is a genius move for him, given he was dealing with, what do I have here? What do I got to work with? And I got my celebrity I can work with. Like, me signing a ball and doing that wouldn't, who the hell wants the ball anyway? Like, that would look, Calkins thinks someone wants his, then it's pathetic. But for him, he has his celebrity to work with. Maybe doesn't have noodle arm, whatever else, doesn't have an arm to work with. He comes up with this genius approach. And I don't think he's getting ripped by anybody.
No.
Everybody's seeing it. Everyone's saying the name Machine Gun Kelly.
He's a guy that people can't wait to rip.
That's true, too.
That, to me, also implies a hat tip.
All right. I think genius for him, but we will not accept this from anyone else going forward. We want you to have to risk humiliation.
Yes.
How much, if you were to be asked to throw out the first pitch somewhere in a month... How much would you practice between now and then?
Very little. I'd throw a strike.
And you'd throw a strike.
Yes. I was a BP pitcher for a really long time.
All right. We got John Martin coming up next. If you want something framed, got some memorabilia, got some wedding photos, got a beautiful piece of art, whatever it is. As I said before, the guy from Jonesboro who had his grandfather's Arrowhead collection, or Dan Barron, who had fishing lures and then pictures of if you want someone to make this and make it look magnificent so you have something to keep and treasure forever, go to the Frame Corner. Easy. Go to the Frame Corner, framecornermemphis.com, 5035 Park Avenue. They specialize in custom framing. And so they take that collection of stuff that if you just let it sit in the corner, it will just sit in the corner or on a table. And they make it beautiful and make it last forever. It is Frame Corner, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. John Martin, when we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Normally straight up 10 o'clock, we got Chris Harrington. He's in Scotland. John Martin is not in Scotland, which makes it more convenient to talk to John. John typically would be with us at 9:30 on Wednesday, but he graciously enough moved into the... into this very important 10 o'clock slot. John, we were talking earlier about this phenomenon of young men chewing hard gum that will strengthen their jaws. Really particularly hard gum that gives them a razor-sharp jawline that you cut paper on. Have you, as a young man yourself, and I know you've embarked on your own fitness journey, is... jaw strengthening gum a part of your own fitness journey?
No, it's like, I mean, before the gum, it was like mewing, right?
What's mewing? I missed it. What's mewing?
Mewing is like it's like a protrusion of the. It's like the same concept. It was just without the gum.
What do you mean? It's like you. I have to Google it.
I don't know exactly how to explain it, but it's the same concept. Just basically, I don't even know if it works. Right, it's sharpening the jawline. So.
Mewing, yeah. A facial reconstruction technique that involves pressing your tongue against the roof of your mouth to change the shape of your jawline and face. Named after British orthodontist John Mew, who began promoting it in the 1970s as an alternative to orthodontics. So there you go. Mewing. And now it's stiff. I don't know. I've never thought about your jawline. How is it? How would you say it is? Like, 1 to 10. 10 being just the best jawline ever. 1 being a weak, feeble, flabby, really pathetic jawline.
I'd say it's like a 3 or 4.
Oh, you don't love your jawline?
No, it's not great, but it's fine. It's fine. I had braces when I was younger, you know.
Does that hurt the jawline?
No, I also had like an apparatus that was put in to kind of that changed my bite a little bit, like way back when, that like basically brought my jaw like a little
forward. Thank God, your mother, man. What a saint. What a saint.
So we had that. But it's like three. Look, at this point, I don't even care what I look like.
You say that, but you got to get camera ready for the basketball season, which is partly why you're embarked on this fitness journey.
I mean, I care to an extent. I mean, I don't want to be like, fat ass, but beyond that,
here's the point. You still post pictures of yourself. It's usually of you and your daughter.
Not really.
Of you and your
not
daughter.
Not really. Yeah. I posted a video on Instagram today. Like, I think I'm a pretty
If you really hate how you look, you don't post videos or pictures of yourself ever.
That's probably true. Yeah, like it's probably true. Like, I think I'm a pretty good looking guy. Like I don't think I'm like Brad Pitt or anything like that. But I think like if you sat down with me and started talking to me and you're like, oh, that's a nice, that's a cute guy.
How's your fitness journey going?
It's going well. I mean,
Have you still not had alcohol in forever? How long has it been?
No, I've had some alcohol. I relapsed.
You've relapsed. What happened?
I was going to relapse anyway. My brother's getting married next Friday, so I was going to relapse anyway. So I was like, okay, Let's just get out of the way. it's not like it's like a, it's still lesser consumption, right? Like, that's the idea.
John, don't say that's the idea. The idea was 50 days with no alcohol. I remember the idea. You said it exactly.
Yeah.
It wasn't 50 days with lesser
consumption, man.
Right. It was not, the idea is less. No, the idea was zero, John. I remember the idea.
All right? This is not an everybody come around, Jeffrey, and everybody writing a letter. And, this is not, I don't need that, okay? All right? I set a goal. I failed. I'll set another one.
Okay, good. You got to set a goal that you can meet. All right. You have a column up at the Daily Memphian. We talked about this a little bit on your show yesterday, but it is pretty striking, and I'm glad you wrote it. Once upon a time, if you were the best basketball player in Memphis, you stayed in Memphis, you played for your high school, people flocked to the gym to see you. There's lots of Memphis fans who could call in now and regale us with matchups they've seen over the years of this player against this player, right? Like, it was a rich part of the athletic tradition. And now, it's dead. Is it dead?
I mean, it's dead as we knew it, yeah. And the way that you're describing, it's dead, yeah. And it's never coming back. It is sad. It struck me going through this list of how many players since 2019 have come and gone.
Who's on the list?
So, and I even actually missed a 2026 guy that is leaving FACS as well in MJ Hayes. So that's one more guy that we have to add to this list. But let's just go through it. Matthew Morrell, Kennedy Chandler, Billy Richmond, Curtis Givens, Jay Nash, Elijah Curry. Obviously, this new name I mentioned, MJ Hayes, Keeper Jackson, Cello Jackson, and that's just since 2019. And these are all pretty much considered, the best in the city, right? There's a couple of guys like Fred Smith is a junior at Briarcrest, no relation to obviously FedEx, but he's one who I think. He certainly now becomes the best in Memphis if he wasn't before. And so all eyes are going to kind of be on him. But, it was striking to me that the last 4-star or better prospect according to 247, that actually stayed in Memphis for his senior season was Chandler Jackson in 2021 at Christian Brothers. He's at Florida State now. But that's it. And also, like, there is, when there's such a, you know, an exodus of Memphis talent, there is a trickle-up effect for Memphis basketball, for the University of Memphis basketball. You know, Penny Hardaway, when he got the job, people were excited about it for a lot of reasons, a lot of reasons. But one of those reasons was that he was going to be as all-in on Memphis recruiting as anybody since Larry Finch. And only one native Memphian has signed with the Tigers since COVID, and that was Jonathan Lawson. Nobody in 2021, nobody in 2022, nobody in 2023, nobody in 2024. There's nobody in Memphis in 2025.
Well, the problem is if you've already left the community, the decision to come back, it's not that different, honestly, than if you're a kid who goes to college outside of Memphis. Whatever, you could leave Memphis and you go to college in Chicago, right? Your odds of ending up back in Memphis, you see what the, you know, suddenly become more, you've already severed that tie. Whereas if you go to the University of Memphis, you're more apt to end up here, make a living, et cetera, else. It's just, if you go away for prep school or whatever somewhere, your odds of coming to the University of Memphis are severely diminished at that point.
None of those guys has wound up coming back to Memphis. I mean, Matthew Morrell was the target. Kennedy Chandler was a target. You know, Curtis Givens was a target, and all three wound up going somewhere else. Because, you know, I mean, Curtis Givens, legitimately everybody thought he was going to Memphis last November, right? Everybody believed that. Like, it was shocking when he picked LSU. But it really maybe shouldn't have been, because he wasn't here anymore.
So this is not a reflection on the high school basketballs. It's a reality for the high school basketball scene at Memphis.
Yeah.
But it's not, what I mean, this is just the way of the world now, right?
Right. Like, I think, like, maybe I could have done a better job. I tried to say that. I tried to say that this is not just exclusive to Memphis. This is not like some rebellion against high school coaching in the city. It's not that at all.
This is not like, I can't wait to get out of Memphis. Everyone's leaving Memphis. Everyone's leaving everywhere. Like, in this.
Right. No, yeah, exactly. This isn't like some, you know, crime. You know, like, it's not that. It's that, listen, there are more and more of these preps. Like, once upon a time, it was like two, right? And then it became four. And then it became six. And then it became 12. And now it's, you know, now you have the Nike Scholastic League. You have, you know, Sunrise Christian Academy. You have Mount Verd. You have, you know, all these other places that are popping up. You know, now this new one, Christopher Columbus in Miami, because the Boozer twins are there. That's where the Memphis guys in 2026 are all going, is this Christopher Columbus private school in Miami. And so, you know, you just have more and more of these schools pop up, and they have resources and they have dedicated coaching staffs. And, you know, they promise schedules and they promise exposure and TV events. And, you know, I think in Florida you can get NIL. Like, you know, what can Memphis do with that, right? Like, you know, Thaddeus Young came on the show earlier this month and I asked him about it. And he said, you know, we've talked about it. We'd like to do something about it. You know, maybe that's trying to get everybody to stay in their district and not team up on one team so that by the time they're seniors they haven't just destroyed everybody and are looking for other competition. But I don't think you can put the toothpaste back in the tube. There are just too many of these schools popping up. They all play each other. And at the end of the day, when you can sell that, like, hey, you know, you're going to play for future NBA players in high school, it's just too difficult for these families to turn down.
Is it bad? Is this trend a bad thing?
So I don't necessarily think it's a negative, but I also would say I don't think it's as much of a boost as maybe the players and their families are led to believe that it is. I think that's the key difference. You know, it's not like Matthew Morrell going to IMG Academy. Love Matthew Morrell.
Didn't turn him into an NBA player, right? Yeah.
He's still on it. I mean, 4 years later, you know, he's been there his whole career. And I love the kid. I love his family. But it's not like
His basketball career at Ole Miss is quite literally no different than it would have been had he stayed at Whitehaven as a senior. It just isn't. And we'll see on some of the others. Like, we still have to kind of, like...
Let's be honest. It does nothing. Like, it here's the truth. It just like once upon a time, and I know I'm going to sound like I'm 97 years old.
That's right.
But once upon a time, you could play three sports. You could play basketball, baseball, and football, whatever. You could play all three sports.
And run track.
And whatever else. And everybody did that. And so whatever. And then all of a sudden, though, once someone starts saying, I'm gonna pick one sport at age six and I'm going to concentrate on that, then if you didn't do it, you were, quote unquote, falling behind. But did it produce, are there suddenly more and better NBA, NFL players because they did that at a young age? No, not at all. It's just... Now everybody's doing it. Once upon a time, you could stay at your high school, and everybody stayed at their high school, and you could have a high school experience and be the big man at your high school or big woman or whatever. And now, if you don't go to a private academy, you're falling behind. And so, and so, I don't blame anyone for doing it. And maybe at the margin, it makes them better athletes quicker, but it doesn't make them better athletes ultimately. It doesn't change the ceiling for any of these athletes, I don't believe. It's just, if everyone's doing it, you kind of have to do it.
Right,
but if everyone didn't do it, it wouldn't make any difference whatsoever. Like,
right.
it's, none of the best, greatest basketball players of the world did this, once upon a time. The ones who just, Steph didn't do this, right? I don't think LeBron did this. Did LeBron No, he didn't leave Akron, right?
He was at St. Vincent.
Right. He was just...
Well, it was a good old-fashioned go to the... He got recruited by the private school.
Right.
I'd even take that at this point. Right. It's like, I'm rooting for the damn private school.
You're still at least then in your community. Like,
I do
think... So then the question is anything lost? And I think something is lost. I don't think... At age 14, it necessarily benefits your human development to leave your friends, leave your family, and go to a prep school. I don't see how that, and do I think that Penny regrets that he had to play for a local high school as opposed to going to a private academy in Miami, or that Elliot Perry regrets it, or that... I mean, what did Larry Finch and Ronnie Robinson love more than anything else? They love their community and Melrose,
right,
and all of that. And that is just destroyed.
Well, and here's the thing. And I mentioned all of those guys in the piece. Like, you in Memphis, you do have a chance to leave an impact and make an impact in high school. You do. The idea of, the stamp that Elliot made there at Treadwell. I mean, you go down the list of great players that have played here in Memphis and in Memphis high schools. I mean, you're not gonna have that.
No, they have an impact on their community. They have an impact, whatever. Yeah. Are these guys going to have an impact on Christopher Columbus High School?
Like, you're just another notch in the bedpost, right? Like, you're just until the next one comes along. Look, for some players, might it make sense? I would say maybe. But for Memphis players specifically, where there's such a basketball, centric focus and tradition, I would say probably not. But again, as you said, once the trend kind of starts, sees it happening, it's very difficult, to reverse it. And so I don't expect that to happen. And I find it very sad because, look, as much as we love the Grizzlies and the Tigers and everything else, like there's very little that compares to on a Tuesday or a Friday night way back in the day, when it was Joe Jackson versus Chris Jones or Tark Black. I mean, I remember just the buzz. Like, it was amazing, for those games. And there are still some good players in Memphis, right? Like, there are always going to be. But it ain't going to be like that. It ain't going to be like that ever again.
And I saw, Jason yesterday said, well, one of the solutions, if you created one of these schools here, that wouldn't change the phenomenon. It would just be your version of the phenomenon. It wouldn't be like Larry Finch and Ronnie Robinson playing for Melrose. You know what I mean? It would be a private power. They would be traveling around the country and playing. They would be playing.
That's never happening again.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's never happening again.
I mean, the idea of people even staying in their district is like, oh, no, not a chance.
Now, what's nice is we still have neighborhood football games. Like, we still have, like, have we had anyone leave, like, to go play at an academy and in football?
None come to mind, but, I mean, I'm sure someone has gone to IMG.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, did Eric Gray finish in Memphis?
I think he did.
I think Eric finished in Memphis.
Yeah, he did. Okay. He was a... By the way, you hopeful for Eric Gray, Jeffrey? Had ripped off a big run the other day.
That would imply me being hopeful for the Giants.
I was such a hater.
I was glad to see it. That guy was unbelievable.
It was nice to see someone with speed.
Yeah.
The Giants don't have any team speed.
Guy was unbelievable. Well,
Eric Gray is my GOAT. I love Eric Gray. I love his dad. He's my GOAT.
He really impressive. And was an unbelievable, I think, three-time Mr. Football winner at Lausanne. And yes, stayed the course. So there you go.
You can do it in your hometown, and it means more. I mean, it honestly, it's not harder. It's not harder. Like, you know, I think, you know, again, you're going to hear, you know, these coaches from outside that want you are going to tell you what you want to hear, but it's really not harder.
Does it mean, though, anything? You talk about the trickle up and the University of Memphis. Now that Penny has shifted from high school players to transfers anyway, like so many, does it really make a difference? Or is one of the reasons that he's shifted to transfers, you know, which came first, chicken or egg here?
Well, no. I mean, it worked out in that way. I mean, it's all probably related, bro. Like, transfers, it all trickles down. You know what I mean? It's like it's a system. Transfers, you know, guys leaving AAU team to AAU team, you know, college back. Like, it's all like, you know, nobody stays with, you know, anybody anymore. There's no loyalty in this world.
You say that, but I saw you tweeted out just the other day, John. You tweeted out, it was really brought a tear to my eye. It was, got some personal news. I'm joining the Jeff Calkins show on 92.9. And how many years ago was that? You tweeted that the Sunday before our first show in what year?
That was 2013.
And you tweeted it just before we to commence?
That was the day I got the news, actually.
You were going to be hired. Dan had agreed to pay you $15 an hour. Or was it $10 an hour?
It was just $10. $15 would not have, that would not
it
have
was,
happened.
It was when Dan Barron agreed to pay you $10 an hour for 4 hours a day instead of for 3 hours a day. That was the big dispute. Like, if you want to know how to run a successful business, you've got to be heartless enough that you can look across the table and tell someone, a young journalist, a young aspiring guy who doesn't come from means, who considers this his real job, that was the situation you were in, John Martin, you've got to be willing to tell him, I'll pay you $10 an hour to literally talk on the radio and be essentially a second host and a producer. But I'll only do that for 3 hours. I'm drawing the line at 3 hours a day and not 4 hours a day. That's how hard-edged you've got to be. And that was, he was that, man. He could look you in the eye and tell you no.
Well, and he did it quite a bit.
That's a strength. He also built a wonderful station by doing that, obviously. But that was 13. That was in 2013.
Yeah, I've been here ever since. Obviously, it's taken some very different iterations, you know, in terms of my role here. I don't think I would be here if I was still in that same role. As you know, we had many conversations about that over the years. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of nuts.
Let's be honest, John, I would have fired you. The next time you showed up late, I would have fired you. I could.
But you know, it is. I don't know if you're like, I'll be there in 11. I don't know what the hell I thought. But damn,
all these years
been
later.
A long time.
Okay, last thing before I let you go, you tweeted this out, and this happened yesterday, I think, that this video emerged. It's of Precious Achiuwa.
Yeah,
and he is walking behind two giant ass lions, and he is holding their tails. Explain that video to me, and can you imagine that you would do that in the same circumstance? Could you be?
I'm explaining this. What the hell is wrong with Brendan? I mean, I don't know what he's doing. I mean, it just seems like the Knicks need him as their backup center. You know, so I don't really know. If he's just trying to be in touch with I have no idea. But
he obviously had to be convinced that the Lions were friendly Lions, right?
Is that a thing?
Well, it's pretty clearly a thing, or we would have been reading about the death of Precious Achiuwa.
You know what I have seen? I've seen like these guys that like train. You know, maybe not train, but like they're comfortable enough putting their hands in like crocodiles' mouths.
Right, I see that too. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't domesticate. But that's that. No,
I don't think that's domesticated. I think that. Listen, I think there's a difference. A dude who opens a crocodile's mouth and sticks his head in, compared to someone who walks behind two lions holding their tails. I think in the lion instance, you are persuaded that those lions are just well-meaning lions who've been trained out of their lion tendencies, and they're not gonna eat you for dinner. Right, that's what's happening there. In the crocodile one, you don't really believe that crocodile won't eat you for dinner. You just know how to hold the mouth open in such a way that he can't eat you for dinner. I think one is confidence in the crocodile, and one is no confidence in the crocodile. It's confidence in yourself. I think with the lion, it's confidence in the lions.
Well, you got to find more videos, because it ain't just the guys that's putting their head in there. It's guys that are like swimming with those son bitches, man, that are like
they know they've been fed. They know. I think probably with a crocodile, if you know it just ate dinner, it's not going to eat you.
Okay, like, all right, Jeff, I just told you that you and I happen to be on the Louisiana Bayou. You and I don't know how we ended up here, but we're here we are. And, man, you see a crocodile, and I tell you, Jeff, that crocodile is full, man.
I'd have to have long experience with crocodiles and eating and whatever else. And then, but well, no, you're
the
right.
Guy is definitely like a cage, and like, you know, he does that. But still, it's like, you know, it just blows my mind that you would do something like that. Like,
which would you prefer to do? Walk a lion holding it by the
lion.
I would too.
I'd rather walk the lion.
Jeffrey, which would you rather do? Swim with a crocodile or walk the lion?
I think walk the lion.
Why? Why do we all say that? Why is that the right answer?
I think
answer?
There's this thought process of, if you're just nice to the lion, it won't eat you.
Yeah, and like, you know, you're not getting away. You're not getting away from either of them, but like,
the death
like
seems
the
like it would be.
The water
it feels like you can reason
can...
with the lion a little better.
Well, it's because, yes, it seems just in the end it's a cat, right? Whereas a crocodile is reptilian, it's ancient, and know what it's going to do? It's going to put you in a death spin and bring you to the bottom, and it's going to be a horrible death. Whereas the lion is just going to break your neck. Oh, my God, the lion just snapped on John, and his head is gone. But that's it. It's quick.
Well, yeah, I don't know. The crocodile might be quick, too. I don't know.
I think you're in a death spin, and then you drown, I think, is what happens. I think he takes you to the bottom, and you drown.
But, yeah, like, a crocodile looks like when a crocodile does that to you, it's, like, not a surprise.
No, they're remorseless. They're remorseless. They're
like,
ancient.
I knew this son of a bitch would do this. Like, how can I put myself in this situation?
I think we all agree. Maybe Precious was
like,
doing it because he's told it. Maybe he was walking the lion because he knew if he didn't walk the lion, he had to swim with a crocodile. And he was just taking the lesser two evils.
If I was the Knicks, though, I would definitely say, you know, hey, can we maybe cut down on the lion walking? we're going to need you next year, man. We don't have Harden's spot anymore.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Yep.
That's John Martin from the Daily Memphian. You can read his piece over at the Daily Memphian. Before we go, Sam Hardiman's coming up next. I will tell you, if you are shopping for a tractor, and by all means you should be, because tractor shopping is fun. Driving a tractor is fun. If you got a big piece of land, if you got a big garden, if you're bush hogging, get yourself a tractor. Smaller Case IH tractors available now at Mid-South Ag Equipment in Byhalia. They're in stock. 0% financing. Just go take a look around. Go see what I'm talking about. The Case IH tractor. I was at the Erie County Fair outside of Buffalo, and I saw Case IH tractors literally just this past weekend. beautiful. 140 horsepower or less. So it's exactly what you need for this smaller thing. It's not a, you know, this isn't a giant ass Arkansas field, you know, 300 acre tractor. It's the kind of tractor you can use for all the reasons that I said. One, it's again, it's Mid-South Ag Equipment, Highway 302 in Byhalia. Sam Hardiman, when we return. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Sam Hardiman. Sam Hardiman writes for the Daily Memphian. Covers the city. Covers the city for the Daily Memphian. You can read his stuff over there. Before I get to that, Sam, we are having a deep philosophical debate here. Would you, if presented the opportunity, I'm really mandated, you had to pick one or the other. You have a choice. You can either walk behind two lions that are said to be domesticated and holding their tails, or you can swim with crocodiles, giant-ass crocodiles, that are said to not be killer crocodiles. You get to do one or the other.
Which would you pick? This is a really not great decision, first of all.
Well, the funny thing is that John Martin, Jeffrey, and I,
the reality is we're dying either way.
I don't think necessarily. Precious Chua is still alive, and he was walking the lions. We all settled on the same answer, what we would prefer. See if you make it unanimous.
I mean, I think the obvious thing is to go with my fellow mammals here and hang out with the lions. Because, like, I'm sorry, I don't trust reptiles whatsoever. I don't have a beef with reptiles. I just don't trust them.
No, that's exactly it. They feel. They're
literally cold-blooded.
They're literally cold-blooded. They're from an ancient time. They're remorseless. And don't you have a cat anyway?
I do have. I have three cats. They're lovely creatures who I do believe, if they were large enough, would consider eating me. I don't trust that they wouldn't do that. I saw the Precious Achua thing with the lions, uh-huh. And I was just like I'm sorry, like, you got to have respect for God's creatures a little bit. And I'm not saying he doesn't, but I mean, those are ferocious killers honed by evolution.
That's the thing. Yeah, no, I, as you may know, I had a pet raccoon when I was a kid, and in the end, the pet raccoon just, like, one day just bloodied my mom, just went and just attacked my mom and bloodied my mom when we were in the old Country Squire station wagon, and she told the kids, get in the way back, and the raccoon just went and latched on to mom. Now, mind you, the shocking thing, really, less predictable, was that we still didn't get rid of the raccoon after that. But it is, in the end, a wild animal. I think Precious, that was ill-advised.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, he is a very large man. And so, like, if we're doing, like, handicapping of a fight, like, obviously he's still a heavy underdog between him and one lion. But, like, he's at least, like, got, like some money is going to back Precious Achua if this was a betting market. Like, someone like such as myself against a lion, I mean, lights out. Like, unless I pull the thorn out of its paw like Daniel, no.
Right.
You know?
Okay, well, I appreciate your thoughts on this. The continuing saga of XAI, and you had a story about these XAI turbines. Like, right now, this XAI, the giant-ass supercomputer, is not being run off of the power grid, right? It's being these...
Partially off the grid, but largely not on the grid.
Okay. And so then there was this question that has emerged of whether these gas-powered turbines are themselves a little bit of a threat to the public health, and whether they should have had or were required to have some sort of permit. Give us the backdrop of the story and tell us what's happening here.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit. So, you know, we've talked a lot about, in my appearances on this program, how fast XAI has been able to build this giant supercomputer, okay? And essentially this supercomputer is racks and racks of servers full with 100,000 H100 NVIDIA chips, some of the most advanced chips in the world. That requires a ton of power to use. And what this is doing, what this supercomputer is doing, is essentially powering Grok, which is XAI's and X's chatbot, okay, that is, you know, scanning the internet of all human knowledge and coming up with AI. And in order to do that, in order to move so fast, they have relied on natural gas turbines, okay? And what people really need to conceptualize these turbines as is jet engines, okay? That's really what they are. They're burning natural gas. And I'm not an engineer, so I'm not going to go into how that works. But this allowed Elon Musk and his company to move with a ton of speed in Memphis, Tennessee, and to get this stuff up and get it up and running. And the problem that comes with that is you're burning an absolute ton of natural gas if you're XAI. And so that raised the question, which we raised in our story, which published over the weekend. It's still on our website. You can go find it at dailymemphian.com, of when you're burning this much natural gas, typically you are required, if you're operating even one of these turbines, right, you are required to have an air emissions permit for these turbines, because the Environmental Protection Agency considers natural gas turbines to be a major source of what are called hazardous air pollutants. Okay, say that four times fast: hazardous air pollutants. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and XAI does not have one. We asked the Shelby County Health Department, and the Shelby County Health Department simply replied, "They don't have one. They haven't applied for one for the construction of these things." And so then my question immediately became, well, why? Why can they continue to operate these things if they don't have a permit? And so I'll leave it there and let you ask another question.
Well, what, are they mandated? Is it required that they get a tournament, that they get a permit? And by what regulate? Like, is it the Environmental Protection Agency's rule that they should have a permit? Who should be closing them down then? Should someone be over there saying, yo, you don't have a permit? Like right now, if I wanted to do, you know, if we wanted to do something on your property, they would typically require a permit. Someone would presumably show up and say, you can't do this. Where's your permit? So who would it be who would go to Elon Musk and say, where's your permit? And why aren't they doing that?
Well, yeah, and that's the kicker here, Jeff, is, you know, essentially what I asked, and I want everyone to envision the Spider-Man meme in which they're the three Spider-Man and they're all pointing at one another, because that's essentially how I felt last week when I was talking to people, was just every Spider-Man was pointing at the other Spider-Man. And what happened here is, and in the company, a person familiar with the matter, a person close to the company who we've been talking to throughout this process, said, look, we've been told we don't need one for 364 days. We don't need this air emissions permit. These are not permanent turbines. We plan on getting on the Tennessee Valley Authority's grid and not using these turbines. So we were told for 364 days, we don't need an air emissions permit. So I went to the local regulator, which would be the health department, and asked the question. They still haven't answered the question, and they initially rejected a public records request that the Daily Memphian put in for any correspondence among them, the company, and others as too vague, though it was quite detailed. Then I went and I called the EPA, and the EPA called me back Monday morning, the story published Saturday morning, and the EPA essentially said for 364 days, they are not required to have a permit. And so essentially, and I'm still gathering information if whether or not this is for if they're not required to have a permit, or if these are permanent turbines or if they're temporary turbines. And so I'm still waiting on clarity on the EPA regarding that. But essentially, this is a loophole that allows these things to exist and to emit pollutants. Yes.
It's the 364-day loophole, basically. But it's conscious. This has been thought out. This is what they expected. And so well, that seems to be the answer then, right? They can do this for 364 days. And they plan to have it, they plan to not be doing it in 364 days. Is that yes. By the way, speaking of that, MLGNW CEO Doug McGowan spoke to a community meeting where he sort of talked about this stuff. How did he answer those concerns?
You know, he did not have any answers for the question regarding the emissions. He was pressed by some activists in the community, environmental activists, who said you should force the health department to have a community meeting, use your power so they can answer these questions. He sort of demurred on that point. He faced a lot of questions, and this was a community meeting on Saturday, about just what this means for the power grid, what this means for the electric supply and the water supply.
And he seemed to be saying there, like, you all are more important. Like, in times of stress, you will come first ahead of XAI. That seemed to be what he was representing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And that, I think, you know, I don't want to say it's a legally requiring, but probably pretty close to legally requiring. You know, the utilities, particularly public utilities, have essentially a do no harm mandate, right? And so in a time of grid stress, what is more important to the general welfare of the public? The fact that a supercomputer that runs AI is running, or, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of homes, some of whom, you know, the power being on, you know, keeps people alive, you know, particularly people on oxygen, et cetera, right? And so, you know, that is where we, you know, we are. And what he said is, like, look, the company, we would not be in support of this project if this company was not going to agree to demand response, which demand response simply means that in a time of high stress, the company has to ratchet down its power use, right? It has to reduce power by a significant amount. And that's true for many, many large users, industrial users in the Memphis Light Gas and Water system, the GVA system, not just XAI. But he said, for this project, we would not be in support but for that.
And then he also talked briefly about the basically the what they're going to be paying here, right? They're gonna they are going to be I think the number was $7 million a month, right? I think the money was seven weeks in an electric bill. Like, there are public good that comes with this, not just some vague economic development, but actually tax revenue and MLD&W revenue. Correct?
Right. Yeah, that's right. And he essentially said that, you know, the $7 million a month, you know, which comes out to about $84 million a year, you know, is going to be, you know, well more than the cost of serving, you know, XAI, right? And it's actually relatively efficient because any infrastructure upgrades that are being done to serve XAI, they're really going to one place. It's not like you have to build a distribution network to serve this broad area. It's really going to one spot, Frank C. Pigeon Industrial Park. You're just upgrading there. And so that helps. And also, like, let's point out, and I'm not saying that they're doing this out of the kindness of their heart, XAI, but XAI, just like any other large industrial power customer in the Tennessee Valley, has the ability to go around the local utility and get their power directly from TVA, which means they would still be here in Memphis, but TVA would just be sending them a line, okay? It would not be, you know, behind a Memphis Light Gas and Water meter. So that's $7 million a month.
Right.
Maybe it would be six and a half, and it would be going straight to TVA, and it would not be coming to the local utility whatsoever.
You can read Sam's stuff over at the Daily Memphian. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. If you are fed up with your financial institution, Leaders Credit Union would be the place to call or contact. Honestly, go to leaderscu.com/ESPN or just type in Leaders Credit Union. It'll pop up. They got fabulous technology. But because they exist only for the benefit of their members, it's not like a bank that has to pay off stockbrokers. I mean, they're stockholders. A credit union exists only for the benefit of its members. So it all goes into plowed back into better savings, better technology, better service, better rates, etc. Right now they got a 5% APY checking account. No monthly fee, no minimum balance, easy access to your money through their mobile app. Just one element of the things that Leaders Credit Union provides. Go to leaderscu.com/ESPN for details. Got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins, Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.